You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 7 September. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we chat with Preethi Radenhuis, some of the charts of interest, most notably S&P, gold, and some of the gold stocks. Fortress results, dividend collapses, loan-to-value rises, but remains below 40%. And Stephen Nathan from 10X on how COVID-19 has reshaped the landscape of providing advice and what in particular are clients looking for. This show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb: is the banking sector about to recover? And Business Day, Eskom seizes cash from municipalities as it plays hardball with defaulters. Morning markets, we were red again in the US on Friday, S&P off 0.8, NASDAQ down 1.3, both well off the lows, and US closed today for Labor Day. Asia mixed, Sydney up 0.1, Tokyo down 0.2%. Commodities mostly red, gold $1,943 an ounce. The rand is 16.59 against the US dollar. And top 40 opening call looking for a green open, about a 0.4% up.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Preethi Radenhuis, he's founder of Herenia Capital Advisors. Preethi, morning, appreciate your time. A couple of charts that you put up over the weekend for clients. The one I want to kick off with, S&P 500, a bit of a horror Thursday. Friday was looking like a horror show, but it closed well off the lows. I suppose two questions. You know, how much is that closing off the lows significant? Is the bull market in the S&P still intact, or is there perhaps some caution we should be exercising?
Good morning. So a couple of loaded questions there, I think. Is the bull market still intact? Technically, yes.
Okay.
Is it over? I don't know. It's maybe a little early to tell. But what is interesting is that volatility is sort of climbing again. And if you start looking at, and something that I maybe didn't include, if you look at sort of volatility term structure, mm-hmm. Shorter term volatility usually is around half of longer term volatility. So if you look at 9-day volatility versus 1-year volatility, 1-year volatility is normally double 9-day volatility. However, at the moment, if you look at that term structure last week, 9-day volatility is like exactly 100%. Longer-term volatility or double longer-term volatility. And this only really happens very seldomly. 2018 was the last time it happened. Obviously, it happened in March. And it's sort of, last week was another trigger of this happening again. So could this potentially be the start of another sort of extremely volatile period for the next 2 to 3 weeks? Absolutely, sure. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where that S&P chart sort of is born from. So we saw the S&P 500 go up, print new highs, and now last week, Thursday, Friday, pulled back to the all-time previous, or the previous all-time high as a support level, bounced off of it, as you say, but relatively strongly. So the question is, where to from here? And I think that is dictated by this volatility explosion that we've seen.
Okay, and markets are expensive, but we'll see how it plays. And I like your point around that volatility certainly shifted. Let's touch on gold. Gold in of itself seems set to go truthfully either way. And sometimes when looking at a chart, that's the point. It's in the moment in no man's land. However, if we look at some of the gold counters, Harmony, Goldfields, they're looking perhaps weak. And if gold does sort of move lower rather than higher, some of those gold counters are looking in trouble in the short term.
Yeah, and generally gold counters tend to be a bit of a leading indicator of the gold price, actually, which is interesting. I think I guess this is maybe just a product of the smart money or the fund managers really moving on where they think the opportunities are way before the sort of retail investor catches wind of what's going on, right? So it's interesting to see that, we had a lot of these gold stocks closed underneath significant levels, underneath significant moving averages, and all sort of started triggering short trades, if you will, or just warning that you're going to have relatively strong pullbacks. And also, if you remember, during the really volatile times in the market, correlation of everything sort of goes to one, right? Mm-hmm. So if a little bit of panic comes in and we see a strong sell-off, and even if it only lasts a week or whatever the case is, that the, I mean, if you think about it, the NASDAQ pulled back something like 10% in 2 days, right?
Yeah.
So if we pull back, let's say, another 10% during the course of this coming week, that could lead to a little bit of panic and a bit of a liquidity crunch. And we could see the same thing that happened in March when we see gold actually coming off with equity markets. And I think that that is probably what I would imagine to be the more probable scenario for the next week or two, that we actually see gold coming down. And we can see that lead being taken from the gold miners. And that, of course, would be interesting short-selling opportunities in the likes of Harmony and some of the elements.
Quickly before I let you go, banking stocks. There's a great interview with Rick Nefflin with Cookie Coleman on MoneyWeb. And Cookie's are bullish on banks. He's obviously looking at it from a fundamental perspective. Your charts, First Rand, Capitec, Absa, all of them suggesting that there might actually be a bit of a bounce here in the banking space.
Yeah. So I mean, a lot of those they're slightly longer term. I think the full disclaimer is there is currently an open short position on Nedbank.
Mm-hmm.
So taking long positions in the likes of Capitec, First Rand, and so on might be, to hedge a little bit of risk, if you will. But at the same time, you know, we are seeing these banks sort of coming down to longer-term support levels. They haven't had these massive explosive bull runs as some of the gold miners have, of course. From a very long-term perspective, I think that there is value here. And, you know, best of the value manager, I guess, is what 2020 is going to be remembered as. But, over the longer term, some of these companies really are starting to make a lot of sense, even Bright. I don't think that these companies are at risk of going out of business. From a fundamental sort of valuation perspective, they're really starting to look very attractive. And some of these banking stocks, you know, like if you look at Capitec, for example, it has been making, just from a pure technical analysis perspective, been making higher highs, making higher lows, and it's sort of consolidating nicely and building a little bit of strength into a base. So whether or not that actually bounces higher from here, I guess, you know, time will tell. But from a technical perspective, it does look at least as if it's well supported here. And if you were looking for a sort of medium to longer term entry, this would be a nice opportunity to take it.
We'll leave that there. Petri Radenhuis, founder, Herenia Capital Advisors. So appreciate your early morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Stephen Brown. He is CEO of the Fortress REIT. They had results out to the year end June. Dividend cut on the A shares, no dividend on the Bs. Loan to value, which is the number I've been looking at, is 38.5%. That is above what they are targeting of 30 to 35, but pretty much anything sub 40 and the markets are comfortable and certainly that seems more manageable. Stephen, morning. Appreciate your time. Cutting dividends, you're in breach of technically in breach of your REIT, real estate investment trust status. I assume you are engaging authorities around that and that they're probably looking at you with a slightly kinder eye because really, you know, no one projected pandemics.
Yeah. Morning, Simon Brown. yeah, I mean, I think it has been a tough time just on the JSE rules. I mean, you know, we have to distribute 75% of our JSE defined distributable profit every year. And that was really what we did for the year. So we still maintain our REIT status and we complied with all the rules and have paid out our dividend within, I guess, the pre-amended rules within 4 months. So I think we're quite pleased with still being able to meet the requirements and pay out a dividend. But just given what happened with the hard lockdown, I mean, we were down to about 41% of our retail GLA was open and trading. And we've had to give significant discounts there. I think we gave rental relief of about 63 million rand in the retail portfolio in the form of discounts and 143 million rand overall. So it was a very tough last quarter of our financial year. But as you correctly pointed out, I think our LTV at 38.5 is still quite comfortable. We've got quite a lot of liquidity and, about 2.8 billion of cash and available facilities. So we still are I think, relatively comfortable with how our balance sheet looks.
Your LTV, I mean, 38.5, as I said, it's a good-looking number, not within your range, but considering, how much do lower rates help? I mean, are your rates floating or are they fixed? I mean, we're seeing record low prime. Is that perhaps actually coming to your aid a bit?
Absolutely, yeah, it certainly is. We have been, I guess, banging the drum a little bit about how, you know, pre the pandemic and these interest rate cuts, how South Africa had almost globally the highest real interest rates. And we were very pleased to see the cuts. So for what we did to hedge ourselves was we bought interest rate caps rather than swaps. So we are actually overweight interest rate caps, which allows us to benefit from all of these interest rate cuts. So that does make a big difference. And to your earlier point on the LTV, I think, you know, yeah, it's a little bit higher than we would like. But fortunately, that cost of debt is really low, which does help our interest cover ratio and other metrics that the lenders look at.
We've chatted before. I mean, your focus is very much sort of shifting towards, if that's a fair statement, sort of logistics in a sense. You already, you know, what logistics is around, what, 42% or so. Is that shift towards logistics a case of perhaps, you know, increasing that number, exiting some of the non-logistics, sort of the non-core, or is it building more capacity in logistics? In other words, are you looking to grow or perhaps to reduce on the non-logistics side?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually both. You know, the strategic plan is to sell out of our offices. We've got about 2 billion rand there. Our older industrial portfolio, which we saw take a lot of pain, the vacancy is at 17% there. That's about 3.5 billion, so exit that. And then really just recycle that that 5, 5.5 billion into building the top structures on our land bank. And that'll take us to roughly 60% or two-thirds of our SA direct portfolio in logistics and about a third still in our rural and commuter retail.
You mentioned rural there. The one thing, and it seemed to pop up in your results as well. In the retail space, rural seems to have held up a lot better than the sort of big urban malls. And it makes a bit of sense to me. You know, when I go out shopping on the weekend, I'm going to smaller malls. Of course, I'm still in Johannesburg, but picking the smaller. Have you really seen a sort of a hold up in rural as urban sort of takes the pressure?
Look, we definitely have, but most of our portfolio is that. So I guess we lack a comparative big metropolitan mall to actually compare it to, other than the competitors. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we've definitely seen the rural tick up quite nicely, and I think there were a number of factors there: the government grants, and then I think some people are turning back to their places of, you know, sort of where their family lives outside of the metropolitan hubs. And spending there. So we did see a little bit of a dip in our CBD and township centres. But, you know, then the likes of Pine Slopes and Thrapps, we were actually very pleased with the performance.
Okay, and then Thrapps is banger just up the road from me. We'll leave that there. Stephen Brown, CEO, Fortress REIT, really appreciate your time this morning. When you protect your monthly income against the risk of injury, illness and death, you protect your future and the impact you make on those around you. FMI has been protecting South Africans' income for over 25 years, constantly innovating to provide greater claim certainty and cover for more occupations than ever before. Make your impact, protect your income first. FMI, life done better. FMI, a division of Bidvest Life, is a licensed life insurer and authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Stephen Nathan. He is CEO of 10X Investment. Stephen, morning. Talking around investing and what the future will look like, before we get to that, I mean, you know, 2020, obviously pandemic, hard lockdown. Truthfully, as a market, as an investment landscape in South Africa, we came into that in the back of massive delistings from the JSE, modest returns, sort of at best, maybe around in inflation. Kind of almost in a sense that we were coming to a point where there was going to have to be some sort of change in the industry, and COVID has perhaps accelerated or highlighted that need for some significant changes.
Yes, morning, Simon. You know, it's very challenging. As you say, the investment industry in South Africa has been very challenging because even before COVID, returns weren't that much ahead of inflation over 3 and 5 years. And typically, the South African equity market has been very strong. I think it's been stronger than most people realize. And if you look at long-term returns, and we're talking about 20, 30, 40 years, even through the apartheid years, the returns were really strong, real returns of about 7% on the SA equity market. And those have come down dramatically and even worse post the COVID environment. So the investment industry in South Africa and the financial advice industry in South Africa has to look at doing things differently because even the old model, even under high returns, as you know, most South Africans didn't retire with enough capital. So that situation has even worsened today.
You did the reshaping of the advice part of the of our investment industry. I mean, how much of that is of just simply around fees? I mean, if you know, if I'm doing a 7% real return and I get charged 2%, I mean, it's painful, but at least I end up with a real return. If I'm doing no real return and I'm getting charged, you know, 2%, then actually someone's making money. It's not me. Is that going to be the key focus, or is there perhaps more in terms of how we're going to reshape this industry?
Well, hopefully it's going to be cost and value for money because even under the high return environment, as you say, where fees don't seem that much of a problem. They still are a problem, but they're obviously a much bigger problem if your return is lower because really what you want as an investor, you want the highest net return, the return after fees. The problem in the past has been that a lot of advice has really been masked as a distribution cost. So it is really kind of pushing a product or pushing a brand as opposed to what was in the best interest of the consumer. So in this environment where we have had lower returns, and I think the expectation would be for lower returns going forward than we've had in the past, the advice industry must ensure that they, A, give good advice to their clients, which is more important than ever, and B, charge a fair and transparent price for that advice.
And this then, I mean, you know, and we're in a sense talking your book here, and but you know, as clients are looking out and we look at the industry in the next, I don't know, 5, 10, truthfully 20 years, it almost is coming to the pointy area where it says, you know, low cost passive is really the easy win here, not just for the client, but also for the advisors and the providers.
Yes, it's been proven that, you know, that if you look at the facts, it shows that most of these fund managers underperform the market net of fees. So whether it's 70 or 80% of fund managers are underperforming, and unfortunately the 10 or 20% that do outperform, they keep changing. So there's no reliable way to pick the winner. It doesn't matter whether you are an expert investment consultant, a financial advisor. And what we've seen internationally is that the advice industry, advisors, financial advisors have realized that the value they provide is not in picking or trying to pick the winning fund manager because they can't.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, eventually charging for something you can't deliver, your clients stand, you know, find you out. And that's what happened, interestingly, in 2008 in the global financial crisis where a lot of investment funds fell by as much, if not more, than the market. And people realized that you know, the advisors who had told them, or even the fund managers that said, well, we can protect you in a down market, didn't do that. And that's where you saw globally this massive dislocation where since 2008, money has literally in the trillions been flowing out of active into passive. So, you know, if advisors don't realize that, their clients will, and best advisors realize that beforehand. And as I say, focus on where you can add value. And there's definitely, you know, there's definitely a need for financial advice because the financial industry is very complex. It's not just about picking the best fund manager. It's about having a sensible investment plan. It's about managing your expense base. It could be about adding life cover and disability cover. So there is a need for good financial advice, but it must be financial advice that is in the best interest of the consumer, so not pushing a product, and it must be, as I said earlier, at a fair fee.
Financial advisors, the quick and a half minute, financial advisors, almost wrong phrase. We're looking for financial coaches. We're looking for someone to hold our hand in what you say is correctly is a complex space.
That's right. I mean, you want to, you know, you want to get the right, let's keep it to investing, retirement investing. You want to have the right plan, the right long-term plan, and then ensure that people stick to the plan. Because what we saw under COVID with a sharp correction in March is that a lot of people lost faith in their medium and long-term plans, and they sold at the bottom of the market, and then the markets have rebounded and gone on to higher values. So exactly right. It's about being a mentor to people, making sure they understand long-term investment goals, and then sticking to those and not overreacting to emotions, which a lot of us are prone to.
Yeah, that's a much better word than coach, mentor. That's what we need in our lives, financial mentors. We'll leave that there. Stephen Nathan, CEO, 10X Investments. Really appreciate the time. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning at 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or app, and podcast available from 7 a.m. This show was proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for the early morning time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.